KALW.
I'm not a very big fan of it because it usually involves a lot of stolen art.
Whether you're a fan or not, AI is everywhere.
There will be a whole new class of innovators and creative types who will figure out how to use generative AI models to do something they could never have done before.
Today, we'll hear what teenagers think about the intersection of artificial intelligence and visual art.
You might command it to make a piece in a specific artist style, but how does the artist get the benefit from that production?
It's a story from our podcast, TBH. I'm Hanat Baba, and this is Cross Currents. For many Bay Area high schoolers, school lets out this week. Summer's about to start, and at KALW, that means we'll be welcoming a new class of teenagers into our studios to produce the next season of TBH. Every year, we hear stories about the issues they're paying attention to. Today, we wanted to revisit one of those stories from last year's class. It's about the intersection of artificial intelligence and art, something that's also been making headlines recently. Like when actress Scarlett Johansson clashed with San Francisco-based company OpenAI.
The actress speaking out and even hiring a lawyer after ChatGPT debuted the voice of an interactive assistant, OpenAI Sky, that sounded eerily similar to hers.
It looks like you're feeling pretty happy and cheerful.
This after she had declined multiple times to be part of the project.
The company took that version of their interactive assistant down, but the incident highlighted the growing tension between AI and creative industries. So, what do the teenagers think about all of this? I'll let the host of the last season take it from here.
This is TBH. I'm Miriam Reichenberg. I'm a junior at Berkeley High School, and I love going on long walks. This podcast is made by, about, and for teenagers, and for anybody else who wants to hear what's on our minds. Today's episode is about artificial intelligence, its effects on job opportunities, and what it means to grow up around ever-changing technologies.
I do believe that AI is a tool to help learn from. AI shouldn't be a start and stop end goal.
Theodore Nguyen was curious about how artificial intelligence is impacting artists. AI companies are springing up all over the Bay Area, along with job listings for generative AI work, especially in Silicon Valley, the very place you're bound to think of if someone says AI. That's where Theodore lives, and this is his story.
Earlier this year, I came across an ad that sparked troubling thoughts. It featured images created with artificial intelligence. That got me thinking about how it may affect the future of work for me and my generation. The music you're hearing from comes from that Coke ad. It went viral around March. In my mind, it was a huge development. For the first time in corporate history, a major consumer brand had partnered with an AI company to generate a massive marketing campaign using artificial intelligence. Here's Coke CEO James Quincy discussing the partnership in a video release.
OpenAI is a unique opportunity to participate and experiment with that next generation of technology. It's going to be incredibly important and incredibly disruptive in communication, in knowledge work, and many other things.
What I wonder, though, is how is that disruption going to shape my future job prospects as well as my friends? A debate about this topic took place online during the summer. People were talking about AI's impact on artists. I actually have a lot of friends who are artists, so I decided to look into how it is transforming the world of illustrative art. But first, what is AI anyway? Well, it depends on who you ask, and it turns out that even the experts can't really agree on what quote-unquote artificial intelligence is. Here's one definition.
Broadly speaking, AI is a collection of technologies. It's the name that we use to describe a bunch of different technologies that emulates human intelligence.
That's B. Covello, the director of emerging technologies at the Aspen Institute. They admit that their definition of AI is slippery.
Sometimes AI can be something like the autofocus on your camera or a spam filter in your email. And AI is becoming much more ubiquitous in our lives, but it's not often obvious where it exists.
What's worrying artists, authors, and actors, though, is generative AI.
So it's a type of artificial intelligence or a type of AI that is a bunch of different technologies that can be used to create new content.
For the first half of 2023, everyone was talking about OpenAI. It's a software company in San Francisco that created DALL-E. That's an AI system that can create realistic images from text prompts. It also created ChatGPT, an advanced chatbot that has taken the world by storm. OpenAI named the system after
the Spanish surrealist artist Salvador Dali and the Pixar movie Robot. The company trained the DALL-E algorithm to create original pictures by feeding it a database of 250 million images
and the descriptions of them from the internet. DALL-E is just one of several popular image generators, such as Midjourney, Stable Diffusion, and ArtBreeder. For its part, the Coca-Cola company worked with OpenAI software and a consulting company called Bain to create its massive marketing campaign. A central element of the campaign was a museum-style ad. It showed a lot of art pieces and sculptures lobbing a bottle of Coke to each other until it reached a bored art student in need of inspiration. Diving a little deeper, a making of YouTube video of the ad I saw seemed to show Coke marketers using green screens and computer-generated effects to create the backgrounds featured in the ad. For all of Coke's hype about needing to embrace new technologies, this development worried me. Many humans were still involved in this ad campaign, but it appears that a lot of CEOs want to use AI to automate as many jobs as humanly possible. So, I'm concerned that there won't be enough jobs for everybody in the future if we keep up with this train of thought. After all, machines can be cheaper than humans and are often more reliable and consistent. They never seek or need parental leave or ever ask for raises. Was I overreacting? I talked to my artist friends to see what they thought about this whole thing.
My name is Lua Filimonova. I am almost 16 years old. I'm gonna be a junior in Valley Christian Schools. I do a lot of traditional art. I have been going into digital art lately, and I do a lot of music production.
Luba is one of my friends in San Jose. Her father is a software engineer, and her mother is a graphic designer. She sounded optimistic, but a little concerned.
I don't think that AI art will bring people out of business.
Luba believes that audiences will still want to see the artistry that goes into works like paintings, and that digital technology has actually helped traditional artists gain more exposure.
It is, first of all, hard to succeed as an independent small artist because of how many there are and how hard it is to outreach. But it have been a lot easier recently with social media or public art galleries. With the traditional art, people still would love to see original pieces. Because for a lot of people, sometimes they seeing the brushstrokes, they studying it.
She thinks that AI can help artists improve their skills.
I do believe that AI is a tool to help learn from. AI shouldn't be a start and stop end goal.
As an artist, she thinks image generators like DALL-E can help as reference points and spark off creative processes.
It's like using the search bar, except you're getting answers faster and a little closer to what you actually want to see.
Again, DALL-E is an image generator. Users can create relatively sophisticated images by entering text prompts. For example, if you wanted to create a futuristic sci-fi robot, you could type in, "create a futuristic sci-fi robot" in the style of a famous comic book author, and the software will create an image matching that description. Some artists use image generators to brainstorm and create new artistic concepts. My friend Luba cautions, though, that artists who rely on generators too much won't unlock their personal creative expression.
You need to unlock your fullest potential, and relying on AI to do that for you is not very helpful.
Luba sees the value of using AI in art, but she still thinks that tech companies should pay artists for using their works. She's learned online that people have lost their jobs to AI, but she doesn't see or want the future of art creation to be either AI or humans.
You want to be better learning from AI rather than learning to make a better AI. So people shouldn't think, oh, there's an AI crisis, time to get rid of everybody because now they can be replaced. Instead, they need to think of how can we better support both.
Both Luba and my friend and classmate Brianna Bell at Santa Clara High do believe, however, that the technology companies have exploited artists' work online.
I'm not a very big fan of it because it usually involves a lot of stolen art. Like, it can't really generate art without already having stuff, but usually the stuff that it has in its forms is not stuff that people have asked for. They just kind of like slap it in there and like, let's generate new stuff. But it's not new. It's usually stolen.
That was my friend Brianna talking about generative AI. She's expressing a concern that's on many people's minds. For example, comedian Sarah Silverman and a group of novelists sued OpenAI for allegedly pirating their books in early January. And a group of artists sued generative AI companies earlier this year. They alleged that Stability AI, Midjourney, and DeviantArt violated their copyrights and are unfairly competing with them. The AI companies will, quote-unquote, replace the very artists whose stolen works power these AI products with whom they are competing, the lawyers for the plaintiffs said. Generative AI can synthesize styles and come up with new ideas with text prompts. These models are not pirating work in the sense that they're not selling exact replicas of the artist's work. And that's what makes this all so murky, observes Rivka Louisant. She's a multimedia artist at the University of San Francisco who works primarily in the offline world.
We're always being inspired by each other. So I say copy because it is a machine and it is copying. I think even when artists are quote-unquote copying each other, they'll say, like, I was inspired by so-and-so artist. And so I feel like that's also the part where the AI can't tell you, I was inspired by this artist. You might command it to make a piece in a specific artist style, but how does the artist get the benefit from that production?
Louisant is not worried about AI shaping her career, but rather who gets to use and control the technology.
It's a tool that I see that can change for the better or for the worse, and it can only be used for the better if regular people and working people and artists gets to say on how those technologies are implemented, how they're being used, and for what purpose.
Here's one way to think about what's happening.
Copyright law doesn't protect an artist's style.
That's Santa Clara University law professor Eric Goldman. He says that the generative AI company's activities are legal. Say, for example, a person wanted to create a story using Stan Lee's Spider-Man. They wouldn't be able to outright use Spider-Man as a character in their story without paying licensing fees, as the character is an explicit expression of Stan Lee's work. What Goldman is saying is that current U.S. copyright law allows OpenAI to train its algorithms to learn how Stan Lee draws, and then serve up other kinds of artwork using his sketching techniques. Like my friend Luba, Goldman thinks AI will generate new opportunities for those who can adapt to the tech. He may be right. A job listing for a generative AI director at Netflix was recently reported to pay $650,000. Whoa!
There will be a whole new class of innovators and creative types who will figure out how to use generative AI models to do something that they could never have done before, that simply wasn't technically possible before.
I hope my friends do something really cool and amazing with the new tools, but I also want them to be able to make a living. And I think that boils down to giving individuals some level of control over how tech companies use their work. This could involve some form of licensing or contract system, the Aspen Institute's B. Covello suggests. But it's not clear how such a licensing system might work.
There can be affirmative, positive licensing that says, I actively allow this work to be used in these ways, or here are the ways that I allow this work to be used.
B isn't alone in thinking along these lines. A couple of high-profile technologists on Politico, a DC news organization, argued that creators of all kinds should receive periodic paychecks from AI companies who use their worker data. The thinking is that the AI companies are like oil companies in Alaska, extracting and monetizing public resources. They should compensate the public just as the extractive companies pay Alaskans every year. All these ideas and more are likely to be discussed on Capitol Hill this fall. Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer is convening meetings to come up with ideas on how best to regulate the technology. This will give us a chance to pose our own questions to create a future we want to live in. I asked Covello what kinds of questions we should ask. They've been involved in working on federal legislation called the Algorithmic Accountability Act. Here's what they suggested.
What level of transparency is there? What do we as members of the public, or what do we as workers, for instance, what do we actually get to understand about this technology and how it works in our lives?
AI is obviously made of algorithms, but we should ask these companies how these are used in our day-to-day lives and how they work, especially if something goes wrong, Covello says.
When it comes to companies who are building these tools, we may want to ask them what limitations on use do they have, right? Is there anything that they do not allow their users to do using their tools? Are they evaluating these systems for the impacts that they have on people?
Remember my thoughts about the ad where I worried about companies automating humans out of the creative process? It's important to ask all these questions now because we should be able to collectively determine how that scenario plays out in the future. We face many choices. Eric Brynjolfsson is the Stanford Digital Economy Lab's director and an economist who is frequently consulted by policymakers about AI's impact on the labor markets. He argued that CEOs should focus on how AI can augment human capabilities and make us more productive and valuable as workers.
Far too many people ask me, what's going to happen? What's the technology going to do? And what they should be asking is, what do we want to do with the technology? What are our values? So we need to think more about our values now than we ever have in history.
AI is a powerful and expensive tool that has the potential to widen inequality in all fields beyond art. As Brynjolfsson says,
we need to think very carefully what kind of world we want to live in. Do we want a world with widely shared prosperity? Do we want a world where everybody has a stake, where everybody has some bargaining power, where everybody has a role to play?
I hope so. I hope that tech companies will address some of the concerns by the artists and hopefully give them a potential opt-out ability. In this new era, Congress should start making workable adjustments to copyright law to better adapt to this new tech. I hope artists will be able to either adapt or accept these new technologies in their creative processes instead of worrying about their art being stolen. I have the same wish for the rest of the workers throughout the economy. As many others have said, we need to improve and adapt or risk being removed entirely. As for me, I'm going to keep my eye out on new career opportunities. AI has created a new niche with subsectors like the responsible tech sector and the jobs of AI ethics. For sure, it will carve out its own job category in the near future. While we probably shouldn't lose sleep every night over a robot taking all the jobs, we should take the time to think about who gets to set all the rules. We do need to figure out how to harness the technology properly. But it should be people like my friends who are artists and my generation who are entering the workplace who get to have a say over how the tech companies design their products. Tech companies should give artists some control over how their work is used. They should be required to license creators' work. And I hope that we can find a clear definition of AI so we can create some coherent policies that will spread the wealth and the balance of power. If we try to automate everything in our lives, we might come around full circle and work harder to try and solve the problems that we created for ourselves.
Thanks for that story, Theodore. That was my fellow TBH producer, Theodore Nguyen. At TBH, myself and a group of teenagers have been meeting all summer to talk about issues that matter to us. In this roundtable discussion, Theodore asked us what we think about artificial intelligence and artists.
I'm Annabelle Rabinowitz, and I'm a senior at Convent and Stuart Hall High School.
My name is Maharin Dolia, and I'm going to be a freshman at UC Santa Barbara in the fall.
My name is Jamorion Adriel, and I'm a recent graduate at Independence High School.
My name is Carolina Quadros. I'm going to be a freshman at UC Berkeley in the fall.
I think that generative AI to create poems and to create books and even like writing like novels or journal stories, I think they can be super valuable for our society because I think it forces writers to improve. It forces writers to create better work. And it challenges them a little bit to create and use their elements, their like human elements to write something better. And I know from now on, like writers won't be forced to follow a template because they want to exceed generative AI. And
sometimes I see like snippets that people have wrote about their lives and I like, tear up because it's really emotional. I don't know. I just love like writing and I really love how it embodies human connection. And I just don't think any generative AI is going to be able to replicate that and replicate human emotions and be able to like speak from a standpoint of a human.
For like whatever job I do, I definitely wanted to do some type of like spoken word. That's all I've been pursuing for the last few years. So and with AI, I do worry that it could like affect that potentially or it can help me out. Yeah, I would never like use AI for like any of my spoken word. I feel like that's where it kind of like would devalue my work. I want it to come from me.
Obviously, there's like the fear. I have this gigantic fear of like, oh, AI is going to take over all the industries, all the fields. But I think something that's reassuring is that AI can't really replace the human magic that exists in everything that we do. And it won't replace that feeling, like that gut feeling.
I completely agree with my fellow TBH interns. AI-generated work will never come close to replicating that deeply satisfying feeling of connection and creativity. You've been listening to TBH, a podcast from KALW Public Radio. The feature you heard in this episode was edited by Sarah Lai Sterland. Sarah taught along with Holly J. McDeed. This episode was sound designed by James Rollins. Lauren Tran Muchowski is our production assistant. Our artwork was created by Awan Mance. Ganadi Joe Johnson and Tarek Fuda are our engineers. Hanisha Harjani is our supervising editor. Ben Trefney is our executive editor. This project was made possible with support from the Association for Continuing Education, the California Arts Council, and the Silicon Valley Community Foundation. Thanks for listening. I'm your host, Miriam Reichenberg.
That was an episode from season 4 of our podcast TBH, made by, about, and for teenagers. We'll be airing more stories from the series all this week. You can find them all online at kalw.org or wherever you listen to podcasts. Tune in tomorrow morning at 11. Some Oakland elementary schools that were closed are now hosting adult education courses.
I used the adult ed system, the workforce development system. I went to community college, to university. So I went through these systems.
The Second Life of Parker Elementary. That's tomorrow morning at 11. Today's Cross Currents team includes Sarah Jesse, Lina Najia Basuni, Victor Tenz, Shirin Adil, Lisa Morehouse, Angela Johnston, Marissa Ortega Welch, and Sunni Khalid. Our opening theme music is by the John Santos Quintet, as interpreted by Daoud Anthony. For Cross Currents, I'm Hannah Baba.